Fantastic. Hey, if you've got a Bible, turn to Genesis. All right, Genesis. Hey, before we jump in, I've got a couple things I want to tell you too. Is that obviously last Sunday, our baptism, I've been here over 9 years. That's the first one. It's miraculous. That's the first one we've had to cancel. Usually, in the afternoon, evening, but obviously we had to cancel it. And so with schedules kind of crazy and there and all the rest, we've kind of changed that all around. I know Anthony shared with you a little bit about this, but here's what I want to do. We had quite a few that were going to be baptized. And so what we've done is the next one that we can get scheduled is September the 18th. So it's a whole month away. So what we decided to do, if you can wait, if you're going to be baptized and you can wait until the 18th, then that's fine. We'll just go to the beach then. But we realize some folks don't want to wait, have family in town or whatever. And so next Sunday, okay, in here, we'll just do the baptism in here and then out in the courtyard. Anybody who wants to do either one can do them. And if you would like to do that. So if you, again, just check, you can check out at the table, after the service if you would like to, cause next Sunday as we'll do a baptism in here. It'll be cool. It's always a lot of fun. I just hated that it got knocked out. But those things happen. We live in Florida. We know what it's like, right? And so, but the one that we're doing in September will cancel. We'll not do the one that's in October. So this September the 18th one will be the last one of the year. Just because obviously if we have to bump it to September 18th, there's no use doing one, 1st of October. So anyway, everything will be around that September 18th one. So I wanted to tell you about that. Okay, good. If you have a Bible, look at the Genesis passage. And let me, this really is a tough one when you get to this point in time in Joseph's life. Because there's no way to give you a recap and a review of everything that's happening that will give you the picture of today. But I will do just a little bit for you to see. We start our last section. Again, I love doing this in the summers. And we've kind of bled over a little bit into August and because it allows you to see such a central character, such an important character in the scriptures. And when you put it all together, I don't know, it's just pretty amazing. And when you begin to see it. So you have then this picture of Joseph, and we've looked all the way through it. We're coming down to the end. But in his life, there are several sections that go with his life. And it's like little series within a big series. And so we talked about the very first series, which was 3 or 4 weeks. We talked about how God can use your past for his purposes. Even the things that are negative, even the things that are beyond your control, that perhaps bad decisions parents or grandparents made. Okay. And then we went from there to what do you do when your life falls apart? Because Joseph's life just fell apart. We talked about that a few weeks. And the great part is we've been doing a couple of things. We've been talking about Joseph's life, but we're also learning some of the things that God teaches that we can apply to our lives. But then there's a third thing we've been looking at, is the story within the story, and we'll do a little bit more about that today. Because God has put an incredible story within a story here. So there again, what do you do when your life falls apart? The next one's, how do you handle success? It's a tough thing. The thing called success. Very few people can actually handle it. And so how do you handle success? Because obviously Joseph, he went from obviously life falling apart, slavery, eventually prison. And then he was elevated through a series of events to be basically prime minister, second in charge of the most powerful nation of his time. Right? And then basically after that, hey, how's success? We talked about, and this was what we did the last time for the last few weeks, is the power of forgiveness. The power of forgiveness and the power of grace. And those are just so foundational to the scriptures. Forgiveness and grace. And so we talked about those because if you remember the story, obviously, Joseph's brothers who sold him into slavery during the famine, they all ran out of food and now they were standing in front of Joseph. And they didn't know him, but he knew them. And so he tested them, found out that the people they'd become, he forgave them. But remember this, he not only forgave them, but he extended grace to them. What does that mean? Well, Joseph was going to save their lives. Because without Joseph, they would have all died in the famine. And so you have then this picture to where Joseph is going to move the entire family. And remember, the entire family consists only of about 70 people. And he's going to move the entire family to Egypt. And he's going to provide for them and care for them. And so he sends the brothers, this is what we left off last week, he sends the brothers home to tell Jacob, who was named, God had named Israel. And they went to tell Jacob, and they said, hey, you know, Joseph's alive. And he didn't believe them because of, you can imagine, you know, basically his brothers saying, hey, Dad, you remember that accident, you know, with the animal killing Joseph and the blood all over his coat? You know, that was all a lie. And he's alive now. We found him. He's in Egypt. And he didn't believe them until they shared with him the words of Joseph, and they showed him all the things that Joseph had said. And then he believed. And so that's where we pick up now. And today's title is The Big Picture. And this is what we're going to do for the next couple of weeks. We're just going to look. I want you to see a bigger picture. Because that's what's going to happen. Is there's a bigger picture to this. You know, so many times, especially in our culture, we can get so focused on who we are. We can get so focused in our little world that we fail to see the bigger picture of what God's at work doing. It's not so much about you as it's about you in concert with the bigger picture. And so as you see today, a lot is going to kind of dawn on you if you've been following along with us. It's going to kind of dawn on you. You're going to go, wow, boy, there is a much bigger picture to this than just a few little incidences as they happen in moments of time. So let's just walk through them. We'll be able to go through them pretty quickly. We're going to follow our regular format. We're just going to walk through the story, right? Just tell you the story. And then at the very end, we'll do what I call things to learn. They're just applications. Because here's the great struggle is that you can learn these things in the scriptures, right? Just these stories, do different things. But the greater thing is to find out obviously God says, you know, the scriptures say about the scriptures that these things are contained there for you to learn and to grow, to know more about who God is and how it applies to your life. And if you have a desire today to be a follower of Christ, then there'll be a lot of things that it'll share, truth that it'll share with you, that'll be very powerful. And so again, this is the great picture of it. And that's what we're going to talk about at the very end. Also along the way, remember, there's the story within the story that we're going to show just a little bit more about today at the very end. Okay, let's jump right into it. Okay, number one is what I'm going to call the prayer of Jacob. Okay, Jacob was Joseph's father. God renamed him Israel. And so there was a prayer because even though I find this fascinating. Because Jacob had finally learned what it meant to be a follower of the Lord. And the way Jacob learned is that he messed up a whole lot. That could be great encouragement for you. All right? I know it is for me. But Jacob had finally learned that just because this offer is on the table for us to move to Egypt and have everything taken care of, and now I've got a son that is in this great position, he wanted to know what God thought. Right? You know, there's a wonderful verse that you'll recognize it if you've read through the scriptures a lot, but if you haven't, think about this. In Proverbs chapter 3, it says, trust in the Lord with all your heart, and don't lean to your own understanding. In all your ways, or if you will, in all of your decisions, acknowledge Him, and He will make your path straight, or He will direct your path. All right, you got that? It says, trust in the Lord with all your heart. Don't lean to your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him and he'll direct your paths. What is that saying? That's saying this, that as you live this life, as things, you know, life is one of these great things. You can look at it. It has to do with a series of decisions and turns. You know, you come to a fork in the road, you come to a four-way stop, you got three different directions you can go, and you're thinking, man, I don't know which one to go. And you know what the criteria most people use to choose directions for their life? Most people, the criteria that they use is, well, what's going to make me happy, or what's best for me, or what's best for me and my family? And those will take you in selfish directions. Let's be honest. But that is what most everybody that's around you does. So it's really caught on with believers. Well, you just need to do what makes you happy. And I just want to ask you a question. How's that working out for you? I found that the search for happiness, if that's your goal, you'll never get it. You just never catch up to it. And so you have this picture of, Lord, I want to do what you want me to do. Right? And even as cool as this sounds, you know, we're going to move to Egypt. But remember where Jacob lived. Where did Jacob live? Jacob lived in Canaan. That was God. That was the promised land that God had given to Abraham, his father. You remember, God made a whole lot of promises. So much of through the scriptures are based upon God's promises that he made. And the picture that he wrote behind, excuse me, if you will, the story that he wrote behind, the picture that he painted behind all of this picture of Abraham, all the way up to pointing to Christ. And you have this, therefore Abraham was there, therefore Isaac was there, and Jacob was there. And it was the land that God gave to them. It was the promised land. It was the place that God wanted them. And so Jacob was not going to leave that land unless God gave him the go-ahead. So directions, changes in your life, those things that happen, you begin to ask yourself the question, how do you know? Well, I found this, is that in all your ways acknowledge him, and then it's his responsibility to direct you. But the next question is, do you really want what he wants? That becomes the great question. Or do you only want what he wants when it matches up with what you want? Does that make sense? You tracking with me? These are hard things, hard questions. But when you look at it, Jacob had screwed up enough in his life to where he wasn't doing that anymore. How do you learn to be a follower of God? Well, some people have to learn the hard way. And usually that means taking a lot of bad turns and messing up quite a bit, and then God getting you back to where you were, and you're like, okay, finally you get to the point in time in your life where you're like, God, I've gone my own way long enough. I want to go your direction. God, what is it that you want? And after you've acknowledged him, he's promised to keep you in the direction he wants you to be in. I don't know. It's an interesting thing to think about. But that is the most asked question I have from as a pastor. Jeff, how do I know? How do I know God's direction for my life? Well, believe it or not, that's just the desire to know usually puts you in his will. If you want to be in his will, does that make sense? All right. If you want to be in his will, you are in it. It's when you don't want it. And it's easy to lie to ourselves, right? It's easy to say, well, this has to be God. But Jacob had learned enough to where he's going to take a little. Let's look at what he did. All right. So Israel, that is Jacob, took his journey with all that he had, and he came to Beersheba, and he offered sacrifices to the God of his father Isaac. And God spoke to Israel in a dream, basically, or a vision, that is to Jacob, of the night, and said, Jacob, Jacob. And he said, here am I, or here I am. And he said, I am God, the God of your father. And look what he says. Do not be afraid to go down to Egypt, for there I will make you into a great nation. So he acknowledges, he spends time with God, he had sacrifice, which was for that time, and basically prayer, and a response from the Lord says, yeah, you know, I know this is the promised land. You're going to be coming back here. But Egypt is where I want you now, because it's in Egypt that I'm going to grow you into a great nation. And continue to read, look what else he said. And I myself will go down with you to Egypt. Guys, that is the goal of every believer. The goal of every believer is to be in His presence. Notice where God Himself says, I myself. It's a middle voice. I myself will go down with you to Egypt. You know, which implies that if he stays where he is, that's not where God's going to be. Does that make sense? So the question you have to grapple with, really, or if you will, the thoughts you have to put into focus here. Whenever we head in our own directions, God says, okay, if that's what you want to do, then go right ahead. I know in my children's life, there have been times, and the times really are coming up, where I'll say, hey, listen, if I were you, I wouldn't go that way. But if you're bent on going that way, then you'll see. Does that make sense? A lot of times the way that we learn is by it falling apart on us. But the key to it is, God, are you going to be, is that direction you're going to be? You see, it's not about us going different directions. It's about following Him. It's not finding His directions for your life. It's following Him in the directions He's going. So He says, listen, yeah, I want you to go to Egypt. I'm there. I'm going to go with you. And literally, I would rather be anywhere with God's presence. It's an incredible thing. There's a great story with Moses, and God was so fed up with them because of their decisions and their rebellious heart that basically He told Moses, go ahead and take them into the promised land. I'll make sure that you can possess it and be able to live there. He says, but God says, I'm not going with you. And Moses made the thought there. He said, Lord, if you don't go with us, then we're not going. Because the question is, would you rather live in the desert with God's presence or rather go to the promised land without God's presence? You see, if you're a believer, if you've been following Him long enough, you know that that's what you need and long for the most. But the temptation is to get what you want. And then after you've gotten what you want, it was never what you thought it was going to be. And what you long for, if you're a believer, is His presence, His approval. Right? And so you have this picture of Jacob going to the Lord and God Himself acknowledged the Lord in this, and God made his path straight. He looks at Jacob and he says, listen, yeah, this whole thing with what is happening to Joseph, all right, I've orchestrated this whole thing together to save your life during the famine. Therefore, Joseph becomes this great picture of Christ. He was going to save. He went through suffering. He went through all that he did to be in the position that he was of authority to be able to save their lives. And God said to Jacob, yeah, this is where I want you. I'm planning this one out for a long time. And not only is it the direction I want you to go, I'm going with you, right? And he goes on, look at this. I myself will go down with you to Egypt. Look at this. And I will also bring you up again. In other words, I'm going to make a great nation of you while you're there. Well, what actually happened? Well, over the next 400 plus years, the nation of Israel lives in Egypt. Now, probably for the first 40 to 60 years, and depending on how long, could be as long as 100, I don't know. They lived in peace because of Joseph and because of everybody knew that they owed a lot to Joseph. But it said in Exodus that there arose a Pharaoh that didn't know who Joseph was. So then he enslaved the Israelites. And they were there over 400 years. And when God brought them back out of Egypt, there were over 2 million. So in 400 plus years, they went from 70 to 2 million. It's a pretty amazing thing. But again, we look at it in passes of minutes of time, and God has got a direction that nobody can really figure out until you can see the big picture. It's the only title of this today. Then he goes on to make a promise to Jacob. He says, and Joseph's hand will close your eyes. In other words, I'm here to say you're not only going to see Joseph, you're going to be with him, and he's going to be with you until the day that you die. So he gets a direction. Okay. Now in verse 6 through verse 27, we're not going to take the time to read it. You can read it. It's basically the roll call of everyone who left. All the brothers and their wives and their children and the number of children and the children's names. And it's just basically a roll call of all those who left from Canaan and went to live in Egypt. Okay? So you can take a look at that maybe at another time. Number 2 is what I'm going to call the prosperity of Joseph. Okay, the prosperity of Joseph. Now, let's just kind of walk through some of these things. And again, at the end, you're going to see how they apply, but you're probably already seeing how they apply a little bit as you walk along. Number 2 is the prosperity of Joseph. Now, underneath the prosperity of Joseph, I want you to see here that God protects Israel. But remember, when you're thinking of Israel, at the time that we're talking about, it's 70 people. Okay? I've got more at my family reunion than they had a nation at the time. But it was something that God had made a promise to Abraham, and it was something that God was going to do in his own time. But there was a need here. And this is interesting how this happens. God protects. Let's see how he does. Take a look now, if you will, in verse 28. So they all get up and they head off toward Egypt. And as they're getting closer, this is where we pick up. And he had sent Judah ahead of him to Joseph to show the way before him in Goshen. And they came into the land of Goshen. Now, Goshen was part of Egypt. And it was a little bit to the northeast of Egypt. So it was going to be a land that they were going to be allowed to settle. All right, continue to read. Then Joseph prepared his chariot and went up to meet Israel, his father, in Goshen. And he presented himself to him, and he fell on his neck, and he wept on his neck a good while. I mean, the reunion's pretty remarkable. I mean, again, Joseph here is 39, 40, maybe even 41. And Jacob, his father, hadn't seen him since he was 17. So, I mean, this is the subject of which movies write, this reunion. And so basically there was a lot of emotion, a lot of tears is basically the picture. Continue to read. And Israel, that is Jacob, said to Joseph, now let me die, since I've seen your face and know that you're still alive. In other words, it's a colloquialism of saying, it says, boy, now everything in life is complete. There's nothing left. I can die in peace is basically what it is, the picture here. Knowing that you're still alive. And guys, just for more of this, we don't have time to develop this. I'll talk about this in a couple of weeks as we close this whole series. But this was Jacob's son who was dead but is now alive again. Does that make sense to you? And it's just another picture of this picture of Joseph. You see, God's, for those of you that want to know, for those of you who have ears to hear, it's all in there if you look for it. If you want to know, I have found that most people have as much about who God is as they want to know. You know as much about God, you have as much of him as you want. And it's all there for those. And when you walk through Joseph's life and you see everything, I don't think there's a clearer picture. That's why Joseph is such an important and such a central character. So basically, as those now seen your face and know that you're alive. And then Joseph, let's continue to read. Joseph said to his brothers and to his father's household, I will go up and tell Pharaoh and say to him, my brothers and my father's household who were in the land of Canaan have come to me. Look at verse 32. And the men are shepherds, for they have been keepers of livestock, and they have brought their flocks and their herds and all that they have. And when Pharaoh calls you and says, what is your occupation? So let me tell you, okay, this is rehearsal time, guys. And you don't need to embarrass me here, all right? Pharaoh's going to want to meet you. And you're going to be presented to him. And that was a big pomp and circumstance thing to be presented to the most powerful person in the world at the time. He says, now Pharaoh's going to ask you, tell me what you guys do. And you will say, okay, memorize this after me. We are shepherds. Your servants have been keepers of livestock from our youth even until now, both we and our fathers. in order that you may dwell in the land of Goshen. Notice that in order that. Look at right before. Can you hit me back up before? All right. In order that you may dwell in the land of Goshen, which implies that there's a reason that Joseph has. See, Joseph is smart here. He knows that if these 70 come in and they just live in the Egyptian town, they're going to start adopting the Egyptian ways. And more than likely, they'll start intermarrying with the Egyptians. And in one generation, there won't be an Israel. They'll just be Egyptian. Does that make sense? So what does he say? Okay, here's what I want you to do. I want you to tell them you're shepherds so that you can dwell in Goshen. Now look at this next piece. For every shepherd is an abomination to the Egyptians. Now, I don't know why, but the Egyptians just couldn't stand shepherds. They smelled bad for sure, I guess. I don't know, but there's something in the Egyptian culture that they just really look down their noses at shepherds. And so why did Joseph say, immediately tell them you're a shepherd? Because Joseph knew that Joseph knew his brothers couldn't handle the lifestyle of the Egyptians. With all of its wealth, all of its partying, all of its paganism. And if you know anything about the Egyptian culture, it was just highly sexualized, all of it. And so there'd been promises made to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And so in order for these people to live, how come they were able to survive 400 years later? Because there were no Jews here that intermarried with the Egyptians, because to the Egyptians that they were just an abomination. So you look at this prejudice that the Egyptians had for them, and in reality, their prejudice became God's protection. Interesting how God works things out, isn't it? Don't you imagine the little Hebrew kids looking at their mom and dad and saying, hey, mom, why is it the Egyptians just don't like us? Well, honey, they hate shepherds. I don't know. They just don't like shepherds, and we're shepherds. Again, I don't know all of how it works. And I don't know how it all works because these are ancient, obviously, times. But I tell you what, God protects us in ways sometimes you will never understand. And sometimes some of your greatest disappointments may in reality be just be his protection in your life. Because he needed to keep them a distinct and separate people group. And listen to this. Thousands of years later, it's still the truth. Our Jewish friends are still just an amazingly separate and peculiar different people because God's called them to be that way. How come they still have a culture? How come they're still a distinct people group? It just is really miraculous. How is it that they could be utterly defeated and dispersed at 70 AD and in 1948 reconquer the original land and form a nation again? Okay, that's just impossible. How is it that they just didn't intermarry? The Jewish people just didn't intermarry with whatever culture they were in and just disappear? Okay, listen, I'm Irish, but I don't look at myself as Irish. Why? Because I'm Irish and I'm English. I've even been told I've got a little bit of American Indian in me. I mean, I've got more stuff in me now that you... I'm just a conglomeration, all right, of people groups. But how is it? Well, I think it's interesting that God made his people a group that was prejudiced against so that they could remain separate. And it's still that way today. 3,000, 4,000 years later. Is that not remarkable? As you see God's handiwork in and through all of it. I don't know. Pretty amazing to me. Number two. Is Egypt grows economically. We're not going to spend a whole lot of time on this, but Egypt, it just is incredible what happens to them. Okay. Well, first of all, obviously you got to know that number one, is that God protects Israel. Number two, Egypt grows economically. Look at chapter 47 and verse 13. All right. 47, in verse 13. All right. It says there this. It says, now then, when there was no food in the land, for the famine was very severe, so then the land of Egypt and the land of Canaan languished by reason of the famine. Okay? And Joseph gathered up all the money that was found in the land of Egypt and the land of Canaan in exchange for the grain that they bought. And Joseph brought the money into Pharaoh's house. And then pretty soon all the money was spent, and they began to trade livestock for grain and eventually homes and land. And pretty soon, imagine being the only nation with food for 7 years. And guys, did you just throw this out to you just for fun? If some of you know anything about ancient Egypt, they were one of the most wealthy nations in history. It's been proven out. I mean, most of their tombs in the pyramids were raided. But remember, they found King Tut's tomb that was over to the side, and it was sealed. And when they went into that tomb, there were pounds and pounds of gold shaped into all kinds of things. Opulent, opulent grave for just a boy king who died young. And so this nation of Egypt was hugely wealthy. But the question is how? If you know anything about Egypt, I mean, the Nile Delta is pretty fertile, and anywhere within a half mile to a mile of the Nile was pretty fertile, but the rest of it was mostly desert. So how in the world could that little nation become so wealthy? Well, imagine, the story of Joseph really explains it when you put it together and understand it. And the rest of this chapter explains why, which we're not going to take the time to read, but I'd love for you to take a look at it, and you can look on down. All the way down through verse 26. So now Egypt, and it says that he was faithful basically to Pharaoh his entire life. Now, number three, this is just something just to think about just for a minute. Joseph is honored as the firstborn. So now we're going to fast forward a little bit, and Jacob is getting close, to dying. I mean, he's an old guy, right? And he's getting close. So he's starting to bring the sons and everybody in and see them. And Joseph is brought in, and he's honored. Joseph is honored as a firstborn. Let's take a look at it. It may not be like a big deal to you, but I'll explain it in just a minute. Look at this. After this, Joseph was told, behold, your father is ill. So he took with him his two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim. Now remember, these two were two boys that were born to him in Egypt, and he gave them Hebrew names. And that's interesting. But let's continue to read. And it was told to Jacob, your son Joseph has come to you. Then Israel, that is Jacob, summoned his strength and sat up in bed. And Jacob said to Joseph, God Almighty appeared to me at Luz in the land of Canaan and blessed me and said to me, behold, I will make you fruitful and multiply you, and I will make you a company of peoples and will give this land to your offspring after you for an everlasting possession. So I want you to see that he's starting to tell Joseph, probably already has up to this point, some of the promises that had been given to Abraham that were passed to Isaac and the promises that were been given to him. And about how that God was going to bring this people group back to the land of Canaan. And so he's telling Joseph this. Now take a look at this. This is interesting. For an everlasting possession. And now your two sons who were born to you in the land of Egypt before I came to you in Egypt are mine. Okay, that's weird. All right. Ephraim and Manasseh shall be mine just as Reuben and Simeon are. Now, what does that mean? Well, you know, when you take a look at Israel, the nation of Israel, especially in the Old Testament, they were divided up into tribes. 12 to be exact. 13 in reality. You'll see what I mean in just a minute. And so Reuben and, you know, Levi and Simeon and Gad and Dan and Asher and Blitzen and Comet and Cupid. You know, all of these guys, right? All of these guys are all different tribes. And when they conquer the promised land, they divide it up. Have you ever wondered why there's not a tribe of Joseph? Because as the firstborn, Joseph was given a double portion. So his two sons were considered sons of Israel or Jacob. So you had the tribes of Ephraim and Manasseh. Therefore, Joseph got a double portion. But what that wound up doing is that people don't know near as much about Joseph because he didn't have a tribe named after him, right? But both his sons became that. So you just have this incredible picture, okay? This incredible picture of basically the faithfulness of Joseph, his reward is being honored as the firstborn son. All right, and here's where we'll close with the story part. All right, what I'm going to just call, and number three, is what I'm going to call the purpose of Jesus. And I want to take just a few minutes here to let you see part of the story within the story. And remember that we're talking about thousands of years. We're talking about, these are ancient times. I mean, there's 400 years between Joseph, over 400 years between Joseph and the time of the Exodus. I mean, that's 400 years just there. So you go back 400 years from Moses, and you're looking at long, long, long time ago. And yet to me, I mean, you have all of the sons and all of the families that are mentioned throughout Israel's history, through all the kings up till the time of David. And then there's about 1,000 years from the time of David to the time of Jesus. So when you go putting all this together, here's what I'm wanting you to see. Is if you want to know, because this is a question that's asked often, especially in our culture. If you want to know what is it that makes this book, the scriptures, any different than any other religious book? Because a lot of people have that question today. It has to do with there is no way that over 40 authors, over a couple of thousand years, could have written in three different languages, and everything points to something that's going to happen. And there are little snapshots throughout the scriptures. And here's this little snapshot here in chapter 49. Let me explain. So you have all of these tribes, and God's made a promise to Abraham. Listen, it's through your family that the whole world's going to be blessed. That's another just a little snapshot. Okay? Just a little one. Hey, the whole world's going to be blessed through you. Then it went down to Isaac and then to Jacob. And now this line was going to keep being passed down. But who is it going to be? Who is the line going to go through? Well, you think it'd be Joseph, right? You think it'd be one of his sons, but no, it's Judah. Judah is the one that God is going to use. And so as all the brothers come in one by one, Jacob is on his deathbed, and he's blessing them. He's sharing them different things with them. And there's one for all of the boys. But the one for Judah, I want you to see, because within it, it's pretty remarkable. Especially when you put it all together with everything else. Now, let's see what he says about him. All right, take a look. In chapter 49, verse 8, Judah, your brothers shall praise you. Your hand shall be on the neck of your enemies. In other words, Judah, you're going to be the one, not just you per se, because Judah is a pretty old guy by this time, but his family and his line. I want you to know that it's your family that's going to defeat the enemies. You will be the strong and the courageous. And it says also, your father's sons will bow down before you. In other words, you're going to be the ruler. You're going to be the guy in charge. And he talks about Judah being a lion's cub, right? Take a look at the next verse. From the prey, my son, you have gone. And he stooped down. He crouched as a lion, right? And as a lioness who dares to rouse him. Look at this. The scepter shall not depart from Judah. What's the scepter? Obviously, it's rule. Now, question. It will not depart from Judah. I had a question for you. Has it departed from Judah? Yeah. No Jewish kings left today, as far as I know. So what is he talking about? This is why sometimes in the phraseology, most of the time people don't understand why they do it. In praise songs or in hymns or in other songs, they refer to Christ as king. Well, it's a picture that rule will never pass from the line of Judah because Christ Jesus himself was from the line of Judah. All right, so the scepter won't depart from Judah. Okay, not the ruler's staff from between his feet. Until tribute comes to him, until that means it is fulfilled and it is praised through him, that is through the line of Judah. It's pretty incredible. And to him shall be all the obedience of the peoples. And now look at this piece. I don't have time to develop this. I just want to expose it to you and let you see it. Binding his foal to the vine. Now, what's a foal? A foal is an offspring. Usually of an equine, usually of a horse or donkey or whatever, it's the colt. Many times foal is just the offspring. It says, and his donkey's colt to the choicest vine. That is, it'll be bound. That is the colt of a donkey. Now guys, this is obvious. This is the picture of the triumphal entry that Jesus went in. You know, the palm branches. And he'll come in riding on the foal, the colt of a donkey. Why is that such a big sign? Well, most people who aren't around farm animals anymore don't know. But it's hard enough to ride a donkey. But if you've ever been on a colt that's never had a rider, you're in for an experience. Have you ever watched a rodeo? Those are horses that aren't broken. But this is what makes this such an incredible picture, this colt riding in. And so when Jesus rode in the triumphal entry and they cut the palm branches and they laid them down and blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord, they knew exactly what Jesus was saying by riding in on a colt because of this verse. You have to remember that the Jewish people, and still to this day, practicing Jewish folks know what the scripture says because they've been taught it since they were young. And so when Jesus came in, they all celebrated. Finally, the Messiah has come, right? Finally, the one that all these little snapshots throughout the Old Testament have all pointed toward. Look at this last piece, not just the colt. This really seals it. It says he has washed his garments in wine and his vesture in the blood of grapes. So you have this picture of sacrifice, blood being shed, right? In order to defeat the enemies. And this is what Judah, you're going to be strong. You're going to defeat the enemies. You're going to do it at great sacrifice. And then there's this cryptic, at the time it was written, it's not cryptic to us, but there's this cryptic reference to this colt of a donkey being tied to a vine. Obviously, it was tied to the vine, and Jesus sent the disciples to get it. I just not enough time to go over everything and to tell you everything. But the parallels, when you add it all together throughout the Old Testament, it all points to something that's going to happen. And guys, these things are written over hundreds of years. But how can they all point to the same thing? Guys, it has to do with who God is. And to say that God doesn't exist is just absolute silliness. You know that, right? We've talked about that in times past, especially in Politically Incorrect. I mean, when you have such an intricate creation, to say that this all happened by chance is just absolute nonsense. Okay? And I know I may be stepping on some toes, but think about it. My favorite illustration is, you know what this shows me? When I look at this and see all what it can do, it tells me that someone a whole lot smarter than I am put this together. When I look at this, I don't think to myself, wow, that's been buried in a pool of ooze for a billion years. And then out it popped. Wow. Who's going to believe that? Nobody. When you look at this, you think, wow, that's incredible all that can do. Somebody a lot smarter than I am put this together. In fact, I still don't really know how to use it. So when you think about this, the greatest enemy that you and I have is death. That is the greatest enemy to defeat. 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 26. In talking about who Christ is and what he would do, that the last enemy to be destroyed will be death. If you have an answer to death, you don't have any problems. I've said that many times. Chapter 15, verse 54. When the perishable puts on imperishable and the mortal puts on immortality, then shall the same come to pass that death is swallowed up in victory. That is the greatest enemy to defeat. So you have this picture of a sacrifice by one that would come, who would present himself by riding on the colt, who would make the sacrifice, wash in the blood of the grape in that picture. It's incredible. Death, where is your victory? Or death, where is your sting? Right? Sting of death is sin, the power of sin. The law, but thanks be to God who's given us the victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. So you see who he is and what he came to do. So when we call Jesus the Christ, we may not know a whole about what that means. But those who have known the scriptures know exactly what that claim is. And it's a powerful claim. I found that most the people that reject who Christ is are ignorant to his claims. Most people that don't know who Christ is, what they do know about him is what they hear from other people, as opposed to what the truth says about him. So I know we have quite a few folks here today that you're curious. We're glad you're here. But the question is, don't rely on what I say or anybody else says about Christ. Go look for yourself, because the scriptures teach that if you seek him, you will find him. The question is, do you want to know? And if you want to know, I'm here to tell you, you will find him. Interesting. Revelation chapter 5:5, this is where I'll close as far as the story, and then we'll share with you a little application in a minute. And there's not any way I can share with you, but listen to this piece. And one of the elders said to me, you don't have to cry. Weep no more. Behold, what? The Lion of the tribe of Judah. If you ever wonder where that came from, it comes from this passage we just talked about. Jesus is known as the Lion of the tribe of Judah. That shows you that the Jewish people at the time were looking for someone coming from the Lion of Judah because of what Jacob said here. The Lion of the tribe of Judah who would come, who the scepter would never pass from his hands, who would defeat his enemies and have to sacrifice and suffer to be able to do it. It's an incredible thing when you begin to see it all together. Okay? So in other words, the Lion of the tribe of Judah, what does it say there? The root of David, right? He's conquered. That is, he's defeated his enemies. No, we have to close. We have to be done. But there's just so, again, what I want you to say, things to learn. Let's go straight to that. Now, what are these things? These are things for you to take with you that you can learn and go. Number one, make sure if you are a believer here today, this only applies to you if you're a believer. Make sure, if your desire is to be who God's called you to be, make sure God's directions are clear before you make any major move in your life. Let me ask you a question. As a believer, do you truly want to be on the page that God wants you to be on? Or do you just want to do what you want to do? And that's a hard question to answer if you answer it honestly. Because in our culture, we're all about you need to do what you want to do. And if I hear it one more time, I'm going to throw up. And here it is. You just do what makes you happy. Okay, that's a recipe for disaster. I'm just here to tell you, because how do you even know what's best? It's just that some emotional whim at whatever you are at the time is going to make that decision for you. You won't even bat 500. You'd do better flipping a coin to make your decisions. Okay, I'm sorry. But the question is, acknowledge him. Do you want to know? Do you truly want to know God's direction for your life? Right? Then consult him, acknowledge him. And he's promised to make your path straight. I'll never forget one time that, not here at this church, all my illustrations I tried to use previously, so nobody is trying to say, I wonder if he's talking about me. I'm not talking about you. But I remember one time that we had a couple at our church, and they'd been a member and had become believers and were really growing, all right, but they were still young. And they'd come to me, and actually I went by their house, And he looked at me and said, man, I got bad news. I said, really? He said, yeah, we've been transferred to Charlotte. And he says, we're making a move to Charlotte. I said, oh, I hate for you guys to leave. I said, God's done so much in your life. It's just been so much fun to watch you. And I said, well, and this, my question to them was, how do you know that God's leading you to move to Charlotte? And he looked back at me like I was crazy. He says, what do you mean God moving me to Charlotte? He says, the reason we're moving to Charlotte is we're going to make a whole lot more money. I got a question. Common occurrence. But just because a whole lot of money's involved, do you think that automatically means that God's in it? Does all the enemy have to do is flash cash in front of your face to get you out of God's will? And again, he didn't go to the Lord about whether the Lord wanted him to go, and he went up. It was a disaster. But he learned. He learned. Well, Lord, next time I'm going to follow you in this one. You'll learn as a believer. If you want to follow him, if all you have to do is ask, and he'll make sure you head in the right direction. Interesting, huh? Interesting. You know, so many times believers get a whole lot more credit than they deserve. Because those that follow him look like they kind of know what they're doing, even when they can't see it. Sometimes the decisions we make are just really weird. But they seem to end up correctly. And then you look like somehow you knew something beforehand and you didn't have any idea. Number two, I really want you to hear this one. When you are snubbed, when you are excluded from the group, the in group or this group or that group, when you're passed over for something, just remember, it might be God's protection. Oh, but it doesn't feel like it at the time. These Israelites were like, well, why aren't the Egyptians? Why do they hate us? You know, I don't know why they hate you, but God sure used it to protect you. Sometimes some of the best things that happen to us, we don't even realize it. Right? So I don't know who or what or why. But always remember, if you're his, he is at work in your life to protect you. As well to provide for you. It's an incredible thing to think about. Number three, just because we're under God's grace doesn't mean that we don't have to be faithful. Gosh, I would love to spend some time on this one. Because Joseph was faithful amongst all of the things that he went through. He was faithful even though there's so many temptations that went on around him. But remember this, grace is an incredible concept. And just because you are forgiven, it doesn't give you just a license to go out and live any way you want to. Just because we're free doesn't mean that we should use our freedom to indulge ourselves in selfish pursuits. It's just not who God's called us to be. But we'll learn. I mean, because God's actively at work. He's not going to let you be that way or live that way. Okay, I've got to be done. But number four, and this is final. When you read the Old Testament, I thought I'd throw this in at the end. Look for Jesus. He's on every page. You know, I had a lady come up to me last night. This happened several times last night, but one in particular, a lady came to me afterwards just to share a few words with me. And she said, you know, Jeff, I've known that story of Joseph all my life. But I had no idea the picture of Christ was in it. I said, yeah. I said, because she was about my age. I said, because when we were kids, you sat in Sunday school class and they told you the stories, but they were just no more different than a fairy tale. You know, Jack and the Beanstalk, just another story that has a moral at the end. What makes it different? This is what she was saying to me. She says, it's come alive now. And I take a look at Passover. I take a look at a lot of the different stories in the Old Testament. And it's a picture of who Christ is. That's exactly. When you read the Old Testament, I encourage you, look for Jesus. Because he's on every page. He's on every page. It is what makes the Scriptures the Scriptures.